Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, June 29th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a $15 an hour minimum wage gets closer to reality in Minneapolis and deciphering the new travel ban. Several groups and politicians on the Iron Range say they're boycotting an upcoming meeting in St. Paul on proposed mining near the Boundary Waters. Dan Crocker reports.
The U.S. Forest Service has proposed a 20-year moratorium on new mineral development on federal land in the watershed of the Boundary Waters. The agency has launched a 2-year review of the proposal. Officials have held one public meeting on the issue in Duluth. Two more are scheduled next month for St. Paul and the Iron Range. Steve Georgie with the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools says holding a meeting in St. Paul on the issue is an insult.
You know, this is our backyard. This is our wilderness. This is our environment. And we can do it right.
He says Twin Metals and other companies should be allowed to submit mining plans before an environmental analysis is done. Opponents of proposed copper nickel mining say it's too great a risk, too close to the Boundary Waters. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
The city of Minneapolis is on the verge of passing a $15 an hour minimum wage ordinance. Council members yesterday approved a number of changes to the proposal. Still, some supporters of the law say they aren't thrilled with how it's shaping up. Brant Williams has the story.
Council members debated nearly a dozen amendments to the proposed ordinance in front of a full council chamber. Perhaps the most significant change is an extended phase-in time for small businesses. Instead of easing up to the $15 an hour starting wage for workers in 5 years, companies with under 100 employees will have 7 years. Councilmember Cam Gordon voted for the extended phase-in amendment for small businesses, but he says he'd rather have large companies get to $15 in 4 years instead of five.
I support it with some regret. I mean, there was definitely a sense that there's urgency here, that we need to start raising the wages of our lowest paid workers. So that they can participate more fully in the economy.
Under the proposed ordinance, large businesses will start paying a $10 an hour minimum wage starting next January. That's 50 cents above the state's minimum wage. The first increase for small businesses would not go into effect until next July. Council members also added language to the proposed law, clarifying that non-hospital health care facilities, as well as programs for ex-offenders, be classified as small businesses. The proposed ordinance was also amended to include a requirement that the city study the impact of the higher wage and present annual reports starting in 2019. The proposed law does not include an exception for tipped workers. Restaurant industry professionals say they support the higher minimum wage, but they want tips to be counted towards the $15. That way, restaurant owners can increase pay for kitchen staff without making drastic staffing changes. And Brian Campbell, a server at a neighborhood restaurant in Minneapolis, says the lack of a tip credit and the longer phase-in for small businesses will not be good for a lot of restaurant workers.
I feel like that is going to leave behind the people that actually need the raises. The servers and bartenders in the restaurant industry are already making well over $15 an hour. The average server or bartender in Minneapolis makes $28 an hour.
But not all tipped workers are making that amount. Catherine Olson is a barista and a counter service worker at a cafe in northeast Minneapolis. She makes around $15 an hour with tips, but not consistently. Olson says she makes enough money to pay her bills, but she works with people who are supporting families and could use the higher wages sooner rather than later.
There are countless workers who will be left behind, you know, get further in debt. There's a lot that can happen in 7 years.
The proposed minimum wage ordinance appears to have enough votes to pass when it comes before the full council on Friday. Only one council member, Blong Yang, voted against the amended law in committee.
It will likely hurt some businesses, especially small businesses. Within the context of North Minneapolis, where I live, we have Robbinsdale, Golden Valley, Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, and those places that are really close by. And so businesses have options that other places may not have.
Yang is up for re-election this fall to retain his seat in the 5th Ward, which includes high concentrations of low income and people of color. He says he knows he's taking a political risk. But Yang says he's trying to encourage more businesses to come to North Minneapolis, and he says the higher wage doesn't help that. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
A revised Trump administration travel ban, approved in part by the U.S. Supreme Court earlier this week, could go into effect today. Dwahali Saikautau talked to refugees and Twin Cities attorneys to get their reaction.
Abu Talib Ali is a wheelchair attendant at MSP Airport. But long before this, the 58-year-old was an attorney in Sudan representing Christian clients. Ali, who is a Muslim, had opposed strict religious law in his own country and was apparently tortured and imprisoned for his belief. 7 years ago, Ali was granted asylum, and he and his family now call Minneapolis home.
When I came, I did not have any family in the United States, but America gave me my freedom. This is the place that helped me feel safe for the first time in 20 years. Now, I am very afraid. I am afraid that people like me will not be able to find safety.
The new temporary order blocks travelers and refugees from six mostly majority Muslim nations who do not have what the State Department calls bona fide relationships with a person or group in the United States. This means people like Ali, without family or close ties to the U.S., could be denied asylum. Ali, who witnessed airport protests at MSP in January, says this latest travel ban is still a bad idea.
The United States is falling into the same trap that Sudan did. When you start targeting people based on their religion, everyone loses.
And he's not alone in feeling this way. Refugees from the affected countries, Somalia, Syria, Iran, Yemen, Libya, and Sudan, are reaching out to Twin Cities organizations and attorneys, sharing their concerns and questions. John Keller is executive director of the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota.
There is strong indication that these executive orders will not survive constitutional muster. And so it's a bit unfortunate that we've got this, 90-day period until the court takes up these decisions, where we're sort of in limbo with a certain spectrum of people who will be impacted.
This latest travel ban only applies to new visa applicants, so the impact is less likely to be visible at airports. Interim ACLU Director Teresa Nelson says everybody will be watching the Supreme Court in October.
I don't know how it'll play out, but I think when the court is looking at this, they're going to be looking at, is this ban really a pretext for discrimination against Muslims? Or is it something that's bona fide that the government actually needs for security reasons?
Kim Crockett sees it differently and welcomes the travel ban. She's senior policy fellow and general counsel at Center of the American Experiment in Golden Valley.
I think these restrictions are very modest. I think that they're consistent with the president's duty to protect the United States. But for us, it's more of a state budget issue as well as a cultural issue.
Her organization believes in controlled immigration and thinks Minnesota spends too much money on resettling refugees.
I think we've welcomed a lot of people here, and now we need to do a good job of actually getting them squared away if they're going to be Americans, be Minnesotans, and not overwhelm that sense of hospitality that we always want to offer here in Minnesota. But I think it's going to get harder to do if we just keep bringing people in.
Meanwhile, over at MSP Airport, at least one lawyer will be monitoring international flights. St. Paul immigration attorney Carol Lynam is organizing volunteer attorneys.
So if someone is denied entry and they do have a bona fide relationship, then we would be working with our local litigators here, tied into people at the national level, to file a lawsuit, possibly contempt, possibly a habeas action, to hold the government to this standard that the Supreme Court set out.
The court's decision could lead to months of hassle for foreign travelers and consular officials who will have to try to determine who is allowed entry into the United States. Dwahli Saikautau, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The city of St. Paul is getting ready to set out the guidelines for redeveloping the site of the former truck plant in Highland Park. The 135-acre site is being cleaned up by the Ford Motor Company, which is expected to sell off its part of the site as soon as next year. People will have a chance to tell the city what they think at a hearing tomorrow morning. Tim Nelson has a look.
This is the intersection of Cleveland Avenue, likely named after 19th-century landscape architect Horace Cleveland, and Ford Parkway, named after the famed industrialist and automaker. And right now, it's one of the busiest intersections in St. Paul and ground zero for the future of the city. Even before the last Ranger pickup rolled off the assembly line down the street in 2011, the city's been trying to imagine what might be next for that site and this neighborhood.
We've been talking to people for 10 years about this project and what would be the great place to create as the site redevelops.
That's Merritt Clapp-Smith, a city planner working on the project.
I hear from so many people that are looking for kind of that forward-looking neighborhood that has lots of amenities and services together, where they can walk and bike easily to things, they can use transit, and they feel like there aren't that many options outside of like the downtowns of St. Paul and Minneapolis.
So the city has put together a 133-page plan focusing on six key principles: a mix of uses on the site, a variety of housing, energy efficiency, good transit service, a host for jobs and tax base, with parks and open space for good measure. It's virtually a city within a city, with a potential $1.3 billion development value and home to, by early estimates, between 4,300 and 7,000 people. St. Paul officials are hoping it'll host as many as 1,500 jobs, about two-thirds the number that were at the truck plant when Ford started shutting it down. And that's kind of the gamble at the heart of this plan, that there will be enough jobs to let many residents work where they live, enough people to draw lots of transit, and enough commerce to make people stick around and not turn the streets nearby into bustling highways. The site is miles from the nearest interstate and sits in one of the city's wealthiest neighborhoods.
Well, it doesn't feel like a gamble to us, really.
That's the city's planning and economic development director, Jonathan Sage Martinson. He says the real risk is making people look elsewhere for what they want: alternatives to single-family homes, shops you don't need a car to get to, and public spaces that help make a community. He and other city officials say they've seen this work in other places, in Denver and Atlanta and elsewhere around the world. But neighbors are divided. Some support the idea and think an urban reboot at the Ford site will make a great neighborhood better. Rob Wales is with Sustain Ward 3, a group of residents who support the city's plan. They think immigration, urbanization, and a changing energy mix will transform St. Paul.
You know, we're going to see increases in population, and single-family housing is just not going to be sustainable for that. So promoting density, promoting different options for people to live in, really started to make sense to us, as well as making a community where, you know, businesses and residences are side by side.
But others are dreading the prospect. They point to big rush hour traffic backups in the area already, parking crunches, and the historic residential feel that makes the neighborhood so attractive. Charles Hathaway lives just a few blocks from the site.
We're at the corner of Creighton and Randolph. Fairly busy intersection in this neighborhood. It's already a busy street, and people are concerned that it's going to become even busier.
He's a supporter of Neighbors for a Livable St. Paul, a group that questions tax subsidies for the project, the density of the development, and the impact on home values nearby.
It's as though this great neighborhood is being used as sort of the amenity for the benefit of the Ford site redevelopment. It's sort of like Highland is a great neighborhood, and now we're going to use that in order to attract people to this site, and by doing so, degrade what's great about this neighborhood.
He'll be among those at the Planning Commission hearing tomorrow morning at City Hall. A recommendation there will send the plan to the city council, but that will by no means be the final word on the project. The city expects it could take until nearly the year 2040 to finish building out the site. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.